This is the Inferno Podcast, the official podcast of UAB Athletics. Blazer fans, this is the place every week for an inside look into UAB Athletics. This episode is brought to you by Pearl River Resort. Welcome into episode 47 of the Inferno Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Griffin, and today's rundown is brought to you by Legacy Credit Union, the official credit union of UAB Athletics. Look at the loaded show we have for you. Obviously, football fall camp is in full swing now. We'll talk about the football team getting ready for the season. Basketball, they've been practicing all summer. They're right around the corner as well. That season will be here before you know it. And then our guest is Mark Ingram, the UAB Athletics Director, of course, as we get a lay of the land with where we are with UAB Athletics. One of the things we'll talk about are the new digs here at UAB, where we have the podcast studio now on campus for accessibility. So we've got all that and more coming up on episode 47. Now, as always, you can follow us whichever way you like on the social media and at YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, whatever thing you can think of, Spotify even. We are all right there, whichever one that is of your ilk that you want to find at all. So we'll take a break, come back, and we'll start our conversation with Athletic Director Mark Ingram here on the Inferno Podcast.
Trent Dilfer here, head football coach of the UAB Blazers. Get out there and tackle your financial goals with a new credit card from Legacy Credit Union. Legacy offers multiple credit cards for whatever your financial objectives are. You can begin earning rewards today with a credit card from Legacy Credit Union. Legacy, the official credit union of UAB.
Welcome back, everybody, to episode 47. Scott Griffin here, the Inferno Podcast, with our guest, Athletic Director Mark Ingram here. We got so much to talk about from the summer. I'm sure you were off on vacation for 3 months doing nothing, right?
Yeah, I've been taking a nap scouring since the basketball season.
Scouring the hills of Italy and all those kind of things. No, you've been raising money and all kind of things. So let's start there with kind of the lay of the land and where you are and all the projects you got going on.
Yeah, you know, we have built or renovated 25 different facilities in my time here, which is exciting, but we've still got a long way to go. And the most pressing item for us right now is the Bartow Arena renovation. We're working on that. There's four different approvals that the Board of Trustees has through their process. We've received two of them and expect to receive the next two over the next, 6 months or so. And that's moving right along. So our fundraising has been very positive. We've been able to make some gift announcements to share with our community about some local partners who've stepped up really in a big way that understand the value of what Bartow Arena means to UAB. So to put it in perspective, we have 200,000 people a year that come through the arena for various events.
Yeah.
75,000 of those are for athletics. The other 125,000 are for non-athletic events. It is a place where people can gather. It is the most visited building on our campus that is not the hospital. Okay, so you can't just walk into the business school as a member of the community, but you can come into the arena, and obviously people do. You know, we host, depends on the year, 5 to 7 high school graduations of all the largest high schools in the area. So it's a really important project because when people come into the arena, functionally it's fine. The size is great, but it does have about 40 years worth of popcorn grease and soda stains, and it's a little tired. The lighting is dim. It could use a refresh, and that's what we're doing. Now, when I say refresh and we're going to do what we're going to do, when you walk in, you're going to think you're in a brand new building. But that's what we want. We want our fans and the community, when they come in, to see this as a really special place and realize that it is a reflection of the rest of our campus. You know, we've done such a good job, Dr. Watts and everybody, to build new classroom buildings, new dormitories, cafeterias, all this modern, state-of-the-art facilities. Bartow Arena just is not. So we're creating an impression, whether it's a good one or a bad one, when people come in the building, right? So we want it to be a positive experience and a positive reflection of what our campus actually is, which is, like I said, this very modern, state-of-the-art place. And so that's a big part of why. And I think it's got a lot to do with our student recruitment. I think it will help with the overall image of what we actually are, not what people maybe perceive us to be. And that doesn't even get into the things that are athletics related, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's great for our teams, great for our coaches. It shows well for recruits. But I think we'll also create a more modern experience for the fan. When I was a kid, my dad would take me to a game, and it was, hey, we're going to go in, we go to the restroom, we go to the concession stand, and then we go to our seat and not move. Well, now, in the modern era, people are like, my buddy Scott's sitting over on the other side.
I'd like to go see him.
Right. Yeah. And so a lot of people during the games are up moving around. You really see this reflected at Regions Field in its design, and at Protective Stadium in its design, that you can walk the entire concourse, still see the game. Right, you can see the field, and I can visit with you, and I can watch the game, keep my eyes on it, and we're going to do a little bit of that in the arena, in Bartow Arena. So I'm really excited about that, and it's just a very important project, and it's not our last, but it's one that's on us.
Right, and it's a landmark for the city, much less for UAB.
That's right.
So it is one of the things you would list on five things of Birmingham. I think Bartow Arena would be there or very close to that. Now, from what I understand, besides the openness and opening the concourse, what you're talking about, the game's still going on, but I can, it's like walking around the house, right? I want the game on so I know what's going on. There'll be a glass, kind of talk about the glass club area possibility that's kind of like the Legacy Arena, I guess, where they did all glass there, maybe?
Yeah, so we're going to pull the front doors out. So, you know, for anybody that's come to a game at Bartow, you can get in on any of four sides, but most people use the south entrance. That's what people call the main entrance, where the ticket office is.
Right.
And there's a, I call it an awning, that sticks out over this. It's not air conditioned, you know, but this awning sticks out. We're going to bring the front doors all the way out to the edge of that awning. So what that's going to do is create this large climate controlled atrium, which that by itself, I think, is going to become a space that today really isn't a space, you know. And in doing that, then we can take the existing concourse and create a club on the main concourse level. So we'll have a club area there where you can be up on that concourse level and, like I said, see the court. We're still going to have our Green and Gold Club. We're still going to have our Champions Club. Those are going to be used. We are, frankly, bursting at the seams in those two spots, So which is a good problem, but it's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking to people about a premium experience, which they were getting, and now they're not so much getting anymore because they can't find, you know, here they are with their plate and they can't sit down. You know, their whole, you know, that's
right,
not what they thought they could at least set their plate down, right? And by building this new club, it's just an expansion of our premium seating at Bartow. Then we're going to renovate the whole concourse, including the restrooms, going to modernize those. They're not what they need to be in terms of ADA compliance. We're going to get those up to code. You know, there's not one photograph in the concourse of any of our former players, which is just wild. Right.
Yeah.
When I say that.
Of all the history.
And everybody always does that. They go, huh. And there isn't. There's not one picture. And so I'd like to put some imagery, some graphics around the concourse of all conference players, all Americans, men's basketball, women's basketball, and volleyball. Those are the three sports that all compete in the arena. So we want to be able to appropriately recognize everybody. The other thing is that, and the McCallum family is Scotty McCallum's family helping us to do this. We have an Athletics Hall of Fame. in name, but we do not have a display anywhere. So we would like to put a Hall of Fame display on the concourse as well. Now, that's an all sports display,
yeah,
right?
But an area for that.
But an area dedicated to our history, because we've got a lot of great former players in a lot of sports. And we do our Hall of Fame ceremony every other year to make sure that we really keep it exclusive. And it's just amazing to learn about, I'm just talking about myself now, about some former players from, you know, the early years, and not just in football and basketball. I remember our first year of the Hall of Fame, and I know I'm getting off topic, but we had Roddy White was going in. Of course, everybody knows Roddy White. But we had a young lady named Mariella Vladilescu from women's tennis go in. And her stats and her history here is just remarkable. And she's got a story of how she got to the United States that will just have you sobbing. Like, it's just an amazing story. And she's one of ours and lives here in Birmingham. And she's a great lady and a business owner herself, and has stayed in the community. But that's the kind of thing that we want to continue to highlight and remind people of our great history. And so having that display, and thanks again to the McCallums for participating, is going to be really meaningful.
Oh, so there's a lot of things going on with that. Yeah. Before we move on from Bartow Arena, the other thing that might change a little bit, there's room on the ends of the basketball. The seats coming down the sides seem to be okay, but how are you going to reconfigure seating?
Excuse me. So the lower bowl, what people think of as the lower bowl, in the end zones, all of those seats are retractables. On the sidelines, it's like the bottom seven or eight rows are retractable seats.
Okay.
We're going to redo all the retractable seats. Frankly, they're not very comfortable. Anybody that's sat in them before or has them as their season tickets, they kind of have a forward lean, number one. It's almost like you feel like you just need to pull the bottom out.
Like you're on a roller
coaster.
Just
pull the bottom out just another 6 inches, then it would all be fine.
Right.
But they're just old, you know. And there's not a lot of leg room, and I don't find them to be very comfortable for myself. So if I'm not comfortable, I want to make sure our fans are comfortable. And then what you're talking about, which I think, and I'm glad you brought it up, is really important. When you're in row one and you're behind the basket, you know, the seating, the shape of the seating bowl is like hockey. It's an oval.
That's exactly right.
But so if you're on row one behind the baskets, you're 32 feet from the court.
It's a long way.
That's a long way to be on row one and be 32 feet away from the court. And a lot of activity as a result of the space, people are there, right? They're there. If there's space there, people are walking there, whatever.
Right.
So we are reconfiguring the end zone seating so that it's no longer that crescent shaped. It'll square off and come all the way to the court. So if you sit in the end zones, you're going to be right up.
It's a premium
at the
ticket.
Baseline. It
right.
will become a premium ticket.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I tell you, man, I was involved in a project in a former life at the University of Missouri. We built a new arena there, and I remember this one particular guy who, when we were when it was time to pick seats, he wanted right behind the basket. It's like just off center of the basket, row one. And a lot of people, you know, go, well, the best seat in the house is center court and then pick the row, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three, row one, row 10, whatever. But he was like, I disagree with that. Okay. And he says, basketball is played on this end or that end. It's never played at center court. It's played on this end or that end. He goes,
That's right.
On the other end, I realize they're 90 feet away. Because when they're on my end, he goes, I feel like I'm in the game. And I sat and watched a game with him once, and I'm telling you, man, you are like,
good.
You better box out because you know they're in there. Yes.
Plus, it's a different perspective than what you get from television,
totally.
Right? Television, we see center court,
and then you really feel how big these guys are.
Yeah,
you know they're all the same size. They don't look that big because they're all the same size. You get up next to them, and you're in the game like that.
Yeah,
these guys are humongous.
Yeah,
the smallest guy is not small.
It's a different perspective.
Yeah.
I want to spend just a minute or two giving people a perspective because I think mentally we compare the UAB, since it's Division I and, you know, it's here, it's ours and all that kind of thing, with Power Four or Michigan or whatever, Syracuse, and kind of talk about when you got here, and this isn't excuse making, this is just fact. Talk about when you got here, what you saw and what you've had to embark on to get things up to where they need to be for the level UAB is in the college landscape.
Yeah, you know, UAB is a great institution. Birmingham's a great city. People love sports here. That's what said to me, this could be great, as I'm sure it has to many other people before me and coaches, et cetera. But it was a bit like a startup. I mean, we had, coming back to Bartow Arena, we had an arena that was adequate. The shape and size are good. Structurally, it's just fine. It's not fancy, but it is suitable.
Mm-hmm.
We really did not have another facility for any of our 18 sports that you would call suitable. We had a soccer field that was flat, but it wasn't a competition quality turf. We had a nice softball field, but no seating. We still have a bad baseball situation, which I do want to address.
But the field's better. We have addressed the field.
We've addressed the field. At least we can play and practice there without any challenge. You know, I talk about this one a lot, which is we had a track that was in the shape of a square, and that square, it's crazy, but it's funny to say, but it's true, and it sloped 10 feet. So you ran downhill and made a left, and then flat, and then made a left. And football practiced inside of that, so football was practicing uphill, downhill, or side hill if they chose. Everybody knows about the dentist office where the football offices were. But our two basketball teams and our volleyball team all had to practice and compete on the arena floor, which was a real scheduling challenge. And you're also, don't forget, it's not as simple as saying, well, you just say that, you know, whatever, women's basketball is going to go from 9 to 11, and then men's basketball will go from 1 to 3, and volleyball will go from, you know, 4 to 6. It's that simple. Well, they have to go to class.
They got to work around class.
And so now you're like, well, but we have this one or two kids on this one team who have that are getting a degree in fill in the blank, and they have to be at class. There's one,
I got labs.
They
got
this
right,
one. It's one time.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to practice around that kid who's critical, right? I mean, you want everybody at practice. And so it's not that easy. So building the basketball practice facility was critical. You know, when Gene Bartow started the program and he practiced in the old Bell Gym, but he played at what is now Legacy Arena, right?
Right, right.
And so he had a practice facility. He had the Bell Gym.
He had Bell Gym, that's right.
And then he played his games somewhere else. So we actually, in building the arena, and we converted the old Bell Gym to a weight room, we actually shrunk the amount of practice space we had for those three mm-hmm. teams, which was just a problem. And it made those coaches be at odds with one another, even though they liked each other personally just fine, but it just created an unnecessary tension and a problem when it came to practice. You know, you talk about, you go to a game, and there have been various times where all of us, doesn't matter who you're following, let's, you know, we're talking UAB, we go, golly, our free throw shooting is terrible. Well, if they don't have a place to go practice free throws, guess what they're going to be?
they're not going to be very good at it. Yeah.
And you think, well, you know, women's basketball could be in there when men's basketball is. No, they can't. Because if Andy Kennedy is out on the court trying to talk to his team and try to explain, here's how we break the press, and there's another kid over here and the ball's bouncing, boom, boom, boom.
It's, we don't, like, even want a guy sweeping.
Can't have that,
much
man.
Less,
we're trying to, I got to focus. And,
yes.
And so practically speaking, it really did not lend itself to having open gym time, which players have got to have if they're going to be great. And so, I mean, I've listed a few things here. We redid the Bell Gym weight room. Pretty significant project there, women's basketball locker room, beach volleyball courts. We've done a lot of things and that are meaningful, but we've still got a lot of work to do. And your question was about, you know, so something about the Power Four and the differences. So we're still trying to get in certain sports what I would call basic needs.
Right.
Right? So the track, oval, flat, that's a basic need. It's really great. It's not superior to anyone necessarily, but it fulfills a basic need. The beach courts fulfilled a basic need. They had kind of these sharp edges around their old courts, and
right.
girls were cutting their feet just trying to get in and out. Having a baseball field that you can practice on. You know, we had to have senior day at Mountain Brook High School one year when I was here because it had rained. It wasn't raining the day of the game, but it had rained like yesterday, and our field wouldn't drain.
Oh.
And so we had to go to Mountain Brook High School for a college baseball game against a conference opponent, and of all days, senior day for our
that's embarrassing.
Yeah, man, that's just not okay. And thanks to Mountain Brook High School for letting us do it.
Yeah.
Because we got the game in. But we've been fulfilling some basic needs. So a place like Michigan, who has long since passed that and really now become elite, you know, in the modern era of revenue sharing and paying players, we're still playing some catch up, right?
We've
still got some work to do there. Tennis, golf, baseball are three that stand out really fast to me that need that we've got to address, you know, once we figure out the arena.
But it's a chronological order,
correct?
Right? I mean, that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, I can't eat the apple in one bite. You're just taking bites at a time, and that's been
and
successful.
You can't bleed your people that you're going to constantly.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you probably have to anyway. But
well, yeah, and you know, they get a real thing called donor fatigue, and
right.
And we have a very philanthropic community here. And it's not that they give to UAB Athletics. It's because they give to UAB Athletics and to UAB Hospital and to the Heart Gala and to Mitchell's Place. And they give to all these wonderful – and to their high schools and their Rotary Trail and, you know, all these different projects that have come and gone that they all participate in. Thank goodness. And we're so glad that they will do that. But you've got to pace yourself a bit. And you got to try not to go back to the same well every single time. And I think we're doing a good job of that. I come back to this revenue share challenge, which is now we're trying to close out the arena, and we're sort of competing with ourselves. When I come to a guy like you and say, hey, man, would you love basketball? Would you make a contribution? We're trying to build the arena. And you might say, well, what about paying these kids? If we don't have good players,
exactly.
It's just not going to matter, which is also true.
It's
and
true.
And so it's all true. It's all, it's a yes and instead of either or. It's a yes, both. And that's been the challenge for us, and we're working through it, and we're not where we want to be. But frankly, in my experience in college sports, there's never enough. And I don't care how much you have, you need more. So that's not a new problem. It's just it's another – area where we've got to compete.
Mark Ingram, our guest, the athletic director here on the Inferno podcast, episode 47. So I was going to marry that thought with the NIL.
Yep.
So that's the dynamic now that you've got to navigate as well. Let's be honest. So do you have a game plan? It's also new. You're probably learning how to navigate through that as you go too. And, oh, this way may work. We need to try this and whatever. So
yeah,
just your thoughts on navigating that, again, at the level UAB is. You're not going to have $2 million you can give London Borg. That's why you lost him.
Right.
I mean, that's just honesty, right?
Today that's the case. I mean, anybody that followed a thing called the House settlement, first of all, it's not House as in Congress. That's a person's name. Grant House was a swimmer at Arizona State, and he, along with some attorneys, filed a lawsuit in California. A judge, Claudia Wilkin, tried the case, which is saying that student-athletes should have the right to their own name, image, and likeness and to be able to make profit from it. That became a settlement, which we now just call the House settlement, where we are allowed to do revenue sharing with our student-athletes. Now, it's important to point out revenue sharing, not profit sharing. So we're an FBS program, Football Bowl Subdivision, which means we could go to the College Football Playoff.
Sure.
While it might be very difficult, we are eligible. We are in the category to win the national, to go to the Final Four and win the National Basketball Championship or the College Football Playoff. In basketball, they don't have those subdivisions. They just have Division I. So there's 355
right.
now, Division I basketball teams.
A lot bigger pool.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But 100 and – it's like 134, 135 Division I FBS football, okay? So we can – out of that many schools that you're looking at, there's less than 10 who operate on their own without support from the university, without financial support from their university, and also operate in the black. Almost every single one of us takes money from its institution in some form. Sometimes it's not direct cash. Sometimes it's what's called indirect support. Indirect support would be something like if the university paid our utility bill. If the university said, hey, we've got a team of landscapers and we manage all the fields or the groundskeeping for you, for everybody.
Right,
and that's
right.
indirect.
So a shared
support. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a very small number that do it all and operate on their own and make enough to operate on their own. So I say that because there is a misnomer that there's just all this, you know, that I've just got all this cash under the desk here, and I just don't, I can't even get my feet under the desk because all this money, what am I going to do? And, but because there are a lot of dollars associated with our operation, it has created a false narrative that we've just not been able to educate quickly enough and properly of what it takes to run this. And then we'll get compared to pro sports, which is completely unfair in terms of the way that they fund themselves. Because, you know, the Atlanta Falcons, I don't remember. Tell me if you recall, how did the Atlanta Falcons track team do last year?
Yeah.
Were they pretty good?
They didn't worry about that.
I don't remember. Did the Dallas Cowboys swim team, did they come out okay? You know, we're required to have at least 16 sports.
And there's no Title IX in the NFL.
Well, what I'm saying is you got to have at least 16 sports.
Yeah.
And then there's we are an educational model. Title IX is an educational amendment to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that is providing equity based on your student population, not 50-50. It's based on your student population. So if you have more females than males, you got to your participation needs to marry that, right? So we're not the same as pro. We just are not the same. And a lot of us, in fact, the vast, vast majority don't make a profit in anything. Like if you say, okay, well, does Ohio State by themselves make a profit in football? Probably.
Yeah.
And you go, well, God, of course they do.
But it's probably not as big as you think.
Not nearly what you think.
Yeah.
You know, we forget that we pay the university back for all their scholarships. You know, what did it cost you if you took a flight to California just by yourself for a trip? What did that cost? Okay, well, now put 140 people on an airplane and charter that plane and go out there and be out there for a couple of days and have meals and hotels and all the things associated and come back.
Yeah.
It's expensive, man. It just is. And so revenue sharing is now allowed. And what we've done at UAB is we created, through the House settlement, making it permissible to do this, now a donor can make a gift to athletics, and it is a tax-deductible gift. They can designate it to whichever sport they want. So prior to that, with collectives, those were third-party LLCs. They are not charitable organizations. So you could give money. It just there was no tax deduction for
which
it.
Which is huge. I mean, that's the
way. Well, it softens it a little bit, you know, for some people. So we've created these competitive excellence funds for every single sport. Any fan, any donor can say, hey, I want to give $100 or $1,000 or $100,000 to tennis, to baseball, to soccer, to golf, to whatever, football, basketball. They can do that. They can't designate it for a particular player, right? They can't say this is going to that person.
Okay.
But they can say it's going to this sport, and then the coach determines.
He designates.
The coach, he or she, determines which player gets what based on productivity, et cetera.
Right, right.
And so that's positive. It all began July 1st. So we're in the throes of it here, and first payments will go out here this week. So, yeah, we're starting that. And so what we're doing is sort of almost like a payroll plan. Instead of saying, let's just use round numbers. If a particular player was going to get $50,000, they're not getting 50. We're going to say you're getting this much per month over a series of months. This is also...
Is it a calendar year?
Pretty much the academic year.
Academic
year. Yeah, so we're talking months. In academic terms, yes, because they can get in the transfer portal.
Right.
So we say this is what you're getting over this many months. And then, you know, the other part there is you're also trying to teach these young people a little bit about budgeting. Right, you got to scale this out over a course of time, just like you or I do with our own compensation. So we're doing revenue share payments over a monthly basis so that we can help them sort of
be thoughtful about
right. You got bills to pay, you know,
it's not
whatever
lump
those
sum.
Bills might be. Yeah,
so it's hitting the lottery, right?
Yeah, so we're in a good place there. As soon as we announced that, we had two people step forward and make really sizable gifts to our programs. That has been meaningful. Like I said, I think that the tax deductibility has softened that for a number of people, and for us internally, I know we feel more organized. The Magic City Impact was and continues to be our collective. We will continue operating the collective. There's a number of reasons for that. As a state entity, there are certain things we cannot do from a business perspective, but they can to generate dollars. So they will continue to operate. where appropriate, and supplement what we're doing. But the bulk of what we're doing comes from internal funding, redirecting. We've taken, and this isn't a UAB model. I mean, literally, I've heard, you know, people in the Southeastern Conference saying, hey, look, we've cut budgets by 15% to 25% to take and redirect those dollars to player payments. So we're no different there. But that plus the fundraising is how we're doing it.
Wow. Yeah. We could do 3 or 4 episodes just on NIL.
I know it feels complicated.
But the settlement, what you're saying, if I'm hearing you correctly, has at least put guidelines and bumper rails, and now you kind of can navigate where you're going, where it was just the Wild West before that.
And there's a cap. There's $20.5 million.
Which helps.
Is the maximum amount that any department can pay. We're nowhere close to that. I wish we were, but we're that's not where we're at yet. But at least there's a parameter, you know, set. And for the places that do have the money to spend the full amount, I would suggest what I can't speak in absolutes, but most of them seem to be spreading that across every sport. So it's not 20 and a half just for the football team or 20 and a half just for the basketball team. They're spreading that out over all of their sports teams. And that 20.5, again, is the maximum for the department. So you mentioned Michigan earlier. They've got, I can't remember if it's 32 or 36 sports. Are they spreading that across every one of them? I bet not.
Right.
But most of them, vast majority, probably.
All right. So let's move to on-field things.
Yeah.
Of course, football has started.
Yeah.
We've got practice going on. Trent Dilfer in his third year.
Yeah.
He's tried to grow the program the right way. There were changes made. So let's start with his – I thought he was very transparent and raw and real, which is who he is, as you know, at the American Conference Media Days last week.
Yeah.
So we want to play a clip from that and then get your reaction. Here's Trent Dilfer from the American Conference.
Nobody's more thankful than me that I even have a job. So, you know, after 7 wins in 2 years, I'm incredibly grateful that we get an opportunity to try to fix this thing this year. It's been incredibly disappointing, but I'm not afraid to admit that I've been broken by this, and that's a good thing. I've had to rethink through some leadership things. I've had to rethink through some football stuff. I've had to rethink through some nurturing things. And the one thing that I've come back to is that the biggest mistake that I made that others make when they're not successful is they try to be something they're not. And we're all wired a certain way, and I'm wired as a nurturer. I'm wired as a positive guy. I've gone back and talked to teammates and said what are the best qualities about me as a leader. I've gone back and talked to coaches that I've worked for or worked with me, and I've tried to go back to being a better version of me. And I think that's what our building needs. I went out and I tried to align myself with new coaches that see the world through my lens. We've tried to love our players tough. We've really pushed them to be growing men.
All right, so I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I played it on the television, and it got great reaction.
Yeah.
It's real. He's your guy.
Yeah.
So obviously you've invested more than normal as an AD. What did you think of what he said?
Well, you're spot on. I mean, that's who Trent is. He has never held back from his feelings. He's always been a guy to admit flaws and faults. It's one of the things that's really likable about him. It's one of the things that I think is also unique about him. Most everybody I know would say, hey, I want feedback in my job. But then you give them the feedback and they're kind of offended by the feedback. Trent is like, give it to me, you know. He's a bit of a sponge like that, and so I think his comments reflect that a bit. We were incredibly close to being a bowl team last year, and when I say that, I usually get some kind of like, you're crazy kind of reaction. But factually speaking, the special teams player of the year, who was our kicker at UAB, missed a field goal from the 7-yard line, middle of the field, against Charlotte with no time on the clock.
Automatic.
And, yeah. I mean, the guy was phenomenal all year, and he just missed it, and we lost. So that's win number 4. We were up 20-3 in the third quarter against UConn and lost. We were up 19-7 in the third quarter against South Florida and lost. That's six. That's how close. That's close, man. So I know that we have the ability to do it. You referenced the changes. We've increased the experience level on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, to call it 100-fold, maybe. I mean, it is dramatically
more. That's hard
more,
to do, too.
Yeah, I'm serious now. I mean, Steve Russ, our new defensive coordinator, has a real commanding presence about him, which is – that is important. You've got to have, first of all, the defensive staff, they got to buy into each other. I got to believe in everything that we're doing, the technique that we teach – how do I shed a blocker? How do I properly tackle? How do I make an open field tackle? How do I properly cover a deep ball as a corner? All these things we have to agree upon. And then there's the scheme.
Yeah.
And it's the scheme that we're running. And then there's the situation of the scheme. It's down and distance at this point of the field and all these, how much time's on the clock. There's a lot into it that we as fans are just watching and do we stop them, do we not stop them? It's so much more technical than that, and the defensive coaches have got to believe in each other first, and then the players feel that. That cascades out through the defensive or offensive, through the entire team, and builds confidence. And I just don't think, and it really is not a knock on any individual coach that was with us last year, the year before. I think all of them by themselves are good coaches. We would not have hired them if they did not have their own positive, you know, track record of success.
Right.
But together, they just weren't right. They just weren't right together. And so I feel much better about that. And I've asked our offensive coaches, hey, what have you seen? And that's a lot of what I hear. Man, they really seem to be very well aligned about what they're doing. So that gives me great hope. One of the interesting things about the talent now, the players, is that, and we're not alone in this, we've always had 20 to 25 graduates, right? You're going to have 20 to 25 kids matriculate out of the program, but now we're going to have 20 more kids leave in a transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Half of those are leaving because they didn't play and they're unhappy and they want to go somewhere where they can play. The other half are like your top 10 best players.
Yeah, they're going for a payday, probably.
They're getting paid. They're getting paid money that we just right now can't afford to pay them.
Right.
And you can't blame a kid who might say, and a few of them are saying, hey, I think I could play at the next level, but I need to take the money because it's just too much to say no to.
Right.
Others are saying, I think I'm playing at the highest level I can. I'm never going to play in the NFL. And these guys are offering me money. This is the only way I'm ever going to make money.
This is free $100,000.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Like, and it's that kind of dough. This is not $15,000. This is $100,000 to $200,000 per person type money. And for a 20-year-old kid, that's
a lot of money.
That's on top of their full scholarship.
Right.
So, and you know, we're losing kids to Florida State and Georgia and Texas A&M, Arkansas, Indiana, like,
which means you're recruiting well and developing players, but. Right.
But so then you got to go replace them. And that's where we have to have money to either retain the guys that were maybe not offered as much. They were offered $25,000 to $50,000. We got to have money to retain those guys, which we were able to do. And then we've got to have money to go and get a guy who's leaving. I'm making this up. He's leaving Purdue. He's the second or third string guy at Purdue. He's a good player, but he's playing behind an all-conference player who's his same age or something. And he's like, man, I got 2 years left. I need to be on the field.
Yeah.
But he has options. So we need to be able to provide something for those guys who are somewhat unproven but have options. It's us or whatever, Memphis, Louisiana Tech, Southern Miss. We need to be able to compete there. The good news is everybody in the American is dealing with the same problem. It's not just us.
Right.
So one of the interesting things, you know, historically people go, hey, how's the team going to be? Well, I knew exactly who we had coming back.
Yeah.
But now I don't know who we got coming back. I mean, I don't know a couple guys we got coming back, but I got a lot of new pieces. And how do we compare to the other teams in the league? Well, they also lost 45 guys.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. You know, like
we'll see
this one school
out.
Has that one guy coming back. Like South Florida has a quarterback coming back who was injured a lot of last year, and the year before that, he was fantastic. He's coming back. He's an excellent excellent, excellent player. So we know he's coming back. We did not play against him last year. But what else does he have around him? I don't know. Here's an interesting one, too. So in the past, transfers were a real challenge for the military academies. Well, they don't have quite the flexibility. They have some, but not quite the flexibility to transfer the way the rest of us can transfer.
Right.
So their juniors and seniors are guys that are, well, there's more continuity there. They know what they have. They are still building a program the way we used to prior to 3 years ago. You know, Trent Dilfer's first year was also the first year you could pay kids. So it's just been a massive transition, and the first year in the American, a massive transition for our football program, for all of our teams, but especially football. And but the academies, we know that Navy, for example, is going to be really good because they still have a lot of their players that made them so good a year ago. They lost a couple guys, but they've still got a lot of people. Army lost their quarterback. He graduated. But for the rest of the league, to say, well, how good is Florida Atlantic going to be? How good is Tulsa going to be? We played them. I don't know. Because
they got 30 new guys.
Right. They got 30 or 40 new guys, and we know who they are. But there's more to it than just, well, they picked up that player. Yeah, but does that player get along with the other guy next to him? Is there infighting in the locker room? They don't get along? Or did they gel together really quickly, and, man, they really hit the ground running? You know, these coaches in all sports have got a challenge that no coach has ever had because of the transfer rule. When I played, which is before the internet and before email, they would post paper signs all over the facility and the cafeteria and whatever, and it was today's schedule.
Yeah.
And early on, I remember staring at the wall and looking at, you know, today's schedule. The first thing, 2:00, team meeting. And this upperclassman who looked like he was 20 years older than me, you know, walked by, and he was looking at it, and he looked down at me and he says, "You're a freshman?" I said, "I almost want to say yes, sir."
You know, right.
He says, "Hey, you see that 2:00 team meeting?" Yeah. He says, "That's not 2:00. He said, "And what you're wearing, don't show up like that." He goes, You're in your gear. You see where it says what we're wearing, full pads? So you take everything, not your helmet, not your shoulder pads, but you go ready to practice. Spikes. Taped, ready, T-shirt, and you get there 10 minutes early.
Yeah, 2:00 means 1:50.
1:50 and dressed and ready.
Yeah.
And, well, we don't have that because our upper class, we have seniors, but they were somewhere else. They were over here and over there and at the other school. And how did they do it? So we're having, I mean, they're having to teach them how to line up, how to stretch, how to warm up, how to lift, how to eat, how to dress. I mean, literally everything. How to get in the huddle or not. You know, all these things they have got to reteach every single semester. There's no hand-me-down. So the subject of team culture is so tough for all, again, every sport. It's so tough. Andy Kennedy literally has 12 brand-new players.
Brand-new.
12.
Yeah.
And so he thinks they all have their own talent, but trying to get them all to trust each other that I know that on the backdoor cut, you're going to be where you're supposed to be.
It's still a team, right? Yes.
Still a team. So those are, again, not our challenges. Those are challenges within college athletics that as fans, we've all got to just continue to adapt to and understand sympathetically for all of our coaches that this is a tough job.
And before we get back to football, generally speaking, again, because it dawns on me that you're also in this precarious position of where you are as Division I FBS, but not Power 4, so it's relative.
Yeah.
Because to me, the high school athlete gets forgotten a lot now because there's so many transfers. Well, I can get this guy, and that's why college programs hire general managers.
Yeah.
Because it's like the pros now.
Yeah.
So to me, again, correct me if I'm wrong, UAB, with all their sports, still has to balance. I got to get some high school guys, at this level, because of maybe we don't have the funds Michigan or Syracuse has, but we still got to be competitive in that game too. So there's even more to manage. Is that a wrong impression or?
No, I mean, now there's this, I don't want to call it payroll because that starts to get into the discussion of are they employees, which they are not. But but there is, you got to keep track of who's compensated through revenue sharing, each month, what do they earn? I don't want to call it bonuses, but there are thresholds where they start to earn more if we become bowl eligible. We've got some things built in if they play an extra game. We've got things built into our contracts for the players that we think are reasonable, but somebody's got to keep track of that while the rest of the coaches coach.
Right,
you know, they got to coach and recruit. That job
is still the business side of it, which is what it is.
There's now more than that. Yeah. The business side for football was used to just be travel. That was the bulk of the business side, is managing the travel budget and then sort of a meal budget to snacks and some
whatever,
food during the year. But basically, and then the recruiting budget. But now there's also this revenue share player budget that's a whole new thing that they're dealing with. And that's, again, that is true Power Four. That is true through the Group of Six. There may be the decimal point might be in a different location. There's more commas maybe, but it's the same challenge. And you mentioned high school recruits. It is a tough time to be a high school player what you've got is I don't think anybody's ready to overtly say this formally, but it's almost like the FCS, let's say Samford, Chattanooga, Mercer, Furman. They've become a bit of a training ground, Division II. They are a kind of a farm system for us.
Yeah.
And we are becoming a bit of a farm system for the Power Four. Nobody wants to come right out and just go, okay, we have an arrangement with these 10 schools, and we're going to send them our best players, but they're going to send us their third stringer.
Your AAA.
Whatever.
Right? You're right below.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
And yet, we still have the same trophy that we can go
compete. Right, you got to compete with
it. So that's why nobody's saying it. But when you just look at the way the transferring is happening, that's what's happening. And we have had, again, I don't want to speak in absolutes like always, never, but a lot of our success does come from a junior college kid coming up,
sure,
a Division II kid coming up who somehow got overlooked or grew.
Yeah, he's done well those 2 years.
Taller, stronger, whatever. Performing differently than people projected, they have a better sense of appreciation than, and again, this isn't about all of them, but sometimes you get a kid out of the Power Four who transfers to us, and then there's a lot of, man, when I was at University X, man, we got this. I got the other thing.
Right.
Hey, man, you're not there anymore, and there's a reason you weren't playing there. So let's come back to Earth and realize that this is a great setup. Our facility's nice. Our coaches are great. Our weight room's great. Our locker room's great. Like, get over yourself a little bit, you know. But we don't have a lot of that. But we have had good success with recruiting those Division IIs and FCS players here so far.
All right. And again, we could do episode 47 through 57 on this and not take a break and not eat. But let's get a little bit to it in football, and then we'll let you run and different things going on. I was noticing the schedule. Obviously, the first night is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a Thursday night.
Yeah.
UAB Alabama State, obviously at Protective Stadium. Great night to kind of expose, for lack of a better term, what we have, new coaching staff defensively, what Mortensen's cooked up, whatever, Zena's growth, all that stuff. Or Kitten, I should say. So, but I look beyond that. You got Navy right after that, who you just referred
They're
to.
Tough.
You got Tennessee the fourth game.
Yeah.
So the start of this thing is really daunting.
Yeah, you know, Alabama.
And exciting.
Listen, Alabama State's fans are awesome. And we have loved playing Alabama State and Alabama A&M, and we do it.
It's an in-state thing. It's good. It's good for everybody.
Yeah, we want to do it as frequently as we can. Yeah. It doesn't always work out for them, frankly. But they have great fan bases, and they play each other here in Birmingham in the Magic City Classic.
Yep.
So they're they have a lot of fans here who follow them and are familiar. And even the ones who travel in, they're very comfortable here when they come to games. So they usually, and I hope again this year, bring a big fan base. That's exciting and important. And it's fun, right?
Yeah.
I don't care who you're cheering for. It's fun to have a big crowd. So Thursday night has been good to us. Because we also are one of the only things happening that night in Birmingham. It doesn't conflict with high school football. It doesn't conflict with the first Saturday of everybody else playing, which is also, don't forget, Labor Day.
Right.
So for the
so it's
people,
really big.
Yeah, yeah, for the people in the community who want to go to the lake that last time or to the beach that
they're
last
time. They're probably not out of town yet.
They're not out of town yet.
Yeah.
So we pick up those guys.
Yeah.
So Thursday's been really good for us. Alabama A&M and Alabama State have been really good to us, and we're thankful for that. You said it. Then we go to Navy game two.
Right off the bat. You've got to be ready.
I mean, there.
Yeah.
And so coming back to Steve Russ. Steve Russ, our defense coordinator, came to us from Air Force. He himself went to school and played football at Air Force. He played linebacker there. He coached at Air Force for a long time. He also coached in the pros for a long time. We now play Army, Navy, and Rice, who all run the triple option. Rice just hired the coach from Davidson, who runs the triple option. So we didn't hire Steve Russ only because of that, but three of our opponents run the triple option, and I'm hoping that a guy from Air Force has a good understanding of how to best defend that.
Right.
Doesn't mean you'll stop. If they're great at it, they're great at it, and it's just hard. But at least, again, coming
back. He has
back,
an idea.
Yeah. And so I feel good about our approach there,
yeah,
our game plan there. Come back, play Akron, game three. We got to get that game. You know, that is the game that we have struggled with for the last couple of years. Georgia Southern, Louisiana Lafayette.
The should wins.
Yeah,
right?
Man. We
instead
gotta
of
win
the,
that
right,
game.
Right.
We got to win that game. And then when we go to UConn this year, later in the season, as I mentioned, we were up 20-3 on those guys. I don't know what they got coming back. I know what we have, but we'll see how we play together,
yeah,
both, right? But I feel like, hey, that is a game that we should compete with. Tennessee is hard to know. I mean, look, man, they're in the SEC. They were in the college football playoff last year. They've got a quarterback situation they got to figure out. I don't doubt that they have a ton of talent. It's just sometimes it's a matter of, do those teams overlook us? Do those teams, have they quite gelled together early?
Because it's
in the
early
year?
There.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
exactly.
You never know.
Exactly.
And then we get into conference play, other than the UConn game that I mentioned. So we've got a good schedule.
And on that game particularly, as you know, having played college football there, you're really looking at it like, yeah, we're going to try to win every game we go against.
Right.
But there's also the concept of, I want to improve my team to get ready for my conference.
Right.
At my deal. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And still work and try to win. But
yeah. What they have to guard against is they cannot just think that they're going to throw the jersey on, roll the ball out, and go home with a W.
Right.
That ain't happening.
Right.
I mean, we're going to come to play.
Right.
And if they're not ready to play, that's when you see those upsets, it's because the game stayed too close too long. And then it gets to about the fourth quarter.
Then it's a game.
It's a game, man.
Right, right.
And you get to the fourth quarter, and if it's still close, even if that team, that other team is winning, if it's close within a score, doubt starts to set in for them. And we start to build momentum, and we start to build confidence while there's – deteriorates,
right, right,
and the guy drops a pass because he's not focused the way he ought to be, and here we go, and we're in it. And so, hey,
that's when upsets happen.
They're gonna, yeah, that's when upsets happen.
Yeah.
They're gonna, like I said, they're gonna be super talented, and we're gonna go there to play. But then, to your point, they've got to get into the meat of their conference schedule, and so do we.
All right, before we get into the lightning round, I want you to talk about Kitna.
I did
a story on him. Very impressed. I'm a direct guy. I was direct about the things in the atmosphere concerning him arriving at UAB from Florida, all those things. I think he's handled it, and I'm not saying this because I do the Inferno podcast.
Yeah.
He's handled it as good as any kid can handle.
Sure.
He handled coming in for Zeno as good as any kid can handle.
Yeah.
He's got great talent. He's got the prototypical NFL size. Just tell me your impressions of him, what you see.
Yeah.
And obviously I think Mortensen is a terrific offensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah.
So
really smart.
Your impressions of it, though.
Yeah, so Jacob Zeno was a great player for us and a terrific kid. He's a terrific young man who I like a lot. Unfortunate for him and for our team that he started to battle a bit of an injury in the middle of the year, not quite middle, almost middle. And then Jalen, not to confuse Jacob, Jalen Kitna comes in for him. I don't know that either one of them thought that he would have to play quite
the rest of the year.
Yeah,
all the rest
of the year.
Right.
But he did, and how he's handled himself, he's a very mature young man. He came from a really difficult circumstance at Florida where he was unfairly judged on something that happened because of an overly sensationalized headline and the inability of modern journalists to do any real journalism and do anything other than take your headline and make it my headline, and then they'll take my headline and run with it, and it's just headlines that are ugly. You know, he got married this summer. He's a real leader. He's incredibly well liked on our team. He's a very positive young man. He comes from a phenomenal family. His parents are great, and I don't just say that because his dad John played so long in the NFL.
Now, they handled it well too.
Oh, by the way. You know, look, anybody who has children can only imagine how he has been ostracized and how you would feel for your own child. And so I'm really proud of him for that. The vetting process on that was lengthy and extensive here because we knew what, again, those sensationalized headlines would look like. And so again, happy for him and happy for his ability to really rebound from that. And talent-wise, he's terrific.
Yeah,
I mean, talent-wise, he's got a big arm. He sees the field really well. He knows the game. You know, I not to name drop, but I went to school and played football with Peyton Manning. And one of the things similar to Jalen, yeah, you heard of him. It's similar to Jalen, he grew up in a house where his dad was watching film all the time and just saying to his little boy, like, you know, Daddy, what are you looking at? Well, I'm watching this guy. He's called the safety, you know, and I'm watching now, see how this defensive end, how he stepped up, and then the corner, he looks like he's going to blitz, but he's not going to blitz. And that's what I'm, you know, like, he grew up in this environment where one of the hardest parts of the game is understanding what is the defense trying to do, and it's what you are watching on film from Sunday to Friday in preparation for Saturday. It's not just, can I throw the ball? I can throw the ball.
Right,
unless my shoulder won't go long, but I'm pretty accurate when I throw
the
ball.
For a while, yeah.
A little bit. And it's not throwing the ball. It's understanding what is the defense trying to do. And we called this play, but we should instead run the other. We should check down or check off or something else.
And by the way, the defense changed coverages in the middle of the play.
Correct, and they're smart too.
Yeah,
you know, so they're trying to disguise things on you. And so Jalen has grown up in that environment, and you know, his mom's a school teacher, his dad's been a high school coach too, and just a really solid family that's been very supportive of him, fortunately, and we're thrilled to have him.
I think it's already a good story.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a really great story as the season goes here. You're watching the Inferno Podcast, episode 47. We'll take a break and come back with more in a moment.
If in life, it's a world of possibilities. If you go for a night out with friends. If you can keep an eye on your money along the way. If you know you have overdraft protection with no fee transfers from savings. When you get a low balance alert, it's easier to say yes to fun. If that sounds good, try Regions Life Banking.
Stay ready for the if in life. Regions Bank embrace the if in life.
Welcome back to episode 47. We keep up with those numerals diligently here at the Inferno Podcast. Scott Griffin here along with our guest, the athletic director, Mark Ingram. We've just covered, I feel like, a plethora of subjects and kind of exhausted, but we could go forever. We want to have a little fun, though.
Yeah.
Not that that wasn't fun. It was very informative.
Okay.
No offense. So, but have a little fun with some different things.
All right.
All right. So my impression of you, and I know you a little bit, but getting to know you more, is you're very forward-thinking and you have this vast, widescreen, to use a media term, look at life. But in a previous life,
yeah,
you were upside down looking between your legs backwards.
That's a long time ago.
As a snapper.
Yep.
Your son was terrific at Vestavia. Hills High School. He followed in your foot. No, I did their games. He was really good. And he, not only that, just for information's sake, he came in the middle of the year after an injury and was a backup tight end, and that team finished 10-2. So he obviously did fantastic. So I wonder, was it genetic that he did the same thing? Did you force him against his will to be a snapper? No. How did that develop?
You're talking about my son, Charlie.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate. We've got four great kids. They're all really bright, thankfully, because of their mother, and they're good-looking kids again.
You had nothing to do with that.
No.
All right.
And they've all been athletic. My oldest, John, is my physical opposite. He was a 2-time All-State distance runner and went to Navy. And then my daughter, Ann Lauren, was an All-State, 5-time All-State swimmer. And then you're talking about Charlie, who played football and baseball and was on the Vestavia baseball team.
I forgot about that part. They won
state title, the 7A championship. And then I have a daughter, Audrey, who's a gymnast at a really high level.
And everybody a different sport.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
Never a time where I said, hey, I'm going to drop you off at the gym when I pick up your sister. No, we didn't have that good fortune. But, Charlie, you know, it's funny. When he started playing football, I think he wanted to be sure to not be a center and a long snapper. It was like, I don't want to just do that because my dad did that.
That's all I'll hear. Know? Yeah.
But it got to a point where I remember somewhere in middle school, they hadn't started kicking or punting. None of that had happened yet. I said, you know, that's starting whatever year it was, next year, the year after.
Yeah.
And I was like, somebody's got to do that.
And I know how to do it, right?
And he would occasionally in the yard, we'd just be throwing. And he would, I try not to press it, and he would just occasionally turn around and try it. And I would just, hey, put your hand here, you know, hold it.
That's
like
your natural inclination.
Yeah. And then he would do it. And I was like, see, that's good, you know. And well, I don't want to do this, Dad. Okay, I just want to try it. But then there got to a point where I was like, you realize somebody's got to do it.
And it's guaranteed playing time.
Well, and there's that. And it's like, you want your team to be successful, right?
Right.
So if you're not doing it, then who's doing it? So that means the person doing
Somebody's probably not doing it
as well as you're doing it. So that means your team is risking having the punt blocked or the whatever. And he's like, yeah, it's
right. It's an important job. Just screw it up and see how important it is.
And it's that many more plays. I was like, do you realize, like, as you know, as you would get older, like any sport, players who don't have the knack for it, they stop playing next season. They get through the season, and they don't come back next year. And I was like, you realize how much more competitive this is becoming to get on the field? He's like, yeah. I was like, so this is an opportunity to stay on the field.
Yeah.
You know, your goal is to stay on the field. You don't want to come off the field. So let's try to do as many things as we can to help the team, and you want to play it, stay on the field. And so that's how he ended up doing it. But I don't think it was genetic, but it's just this weird thing not unlike him, like I, for myself, just realized that all the real athletes didn't want to do it. They just didn't want to do it.
Because you're deemed as not an athlete.
Oh, yeah. Like, that was just,
you're
just
like a holder.
Thing. It's the same as, like, would you call a guy that's really good at darts an athlete?
Right.
Probably not, you know. Yeah,
or chess, right?
Yeah, it's like, it's this thing. And so I just could weirdly do it. And there's not a lot of people who know how to properly teach it. That's something else that I realized within myself and through my own, you know, just kind of being around athletics is there's not a lot of people who teach it. And
there is technique involved.
Yeah,
and,
for
and
sure.
It's a lot more technical than people think.
Right. And being able to – what Charlie had the good fortune of, I guess, with me is he didn't have to go through the trial and error of doing it the wrong way. Like I did it wrong a lot, where somebody would say, you got to do this and the other thing, and it's like, that ain't right. But I didn't know, and they didn't either. And so I kind of had to figure that out over time.
Right. What worked.
He started from the beginning, at least doing it with the right concepts.
Right. And it is definitely conceptual for something technical like that, for sure. What is a private obsession of Mark Ingram? Are you transparent enough and raw?
I love music.
As we talk... Okay.
I love music. I love all kinds of music.
Give me an example of that. Are we talking Beethoven to rap, or so, not that vast, or what are we talking
about? It's funny that you say that, because I was listening to Vivaldi on the way home yesterday morning and Beethoven on the way in, and my wife was like, what are you doing? She thought I was like going crazy. I was like, I listen to this every now and then. No, you don't. And I was like, listen, just because I don't listen to it with
you
doesn't mean that I don't, you know, ever, but I do. I like all kinds of music. The genre of music that I have liked the least is country music. I am kind of getting into it. I'm starting to enjoy it over the last 5 or 7 years.
As it evolves, right?
Yeah, yeah. I like,
because there's elements.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah. I like reggae music and rock music and, yeah, all sorts of music. Yeah.
All right, so which band or song can be on continuous play
in your brain? All the time.
He's got the answers.
All the time. You can play Van Halen.
You don't even listen to the question.
Start to finish, so, brother.
Van Halen.
Yep. Anytime. Any time of the day.
Well, now, why is that? Are we talking David Lee Roth Van Halen? Or what are we talking about?
They're two different bands, really.
They are. Two different sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
Hagar? What are we talking about?
They had Gary Cherone for a minute from Extreme. I like all of it. I do. I like all of them. I just think of them as two different bands. And when I was a little kid, I remember Van Halen 1984 came out, which had Jump and Panama on it. And it was just sounds that I'd never heard. And that was also when MTV became a thing.
Yeah.
And when MTV played music videos, that's what it was called, music television. It wasn't just
music television.
Stupid reality shows. It was music videos. And you're just fascinated by watching these kind of little fake mini concerts over and over and over again, and just was enamored by their playing ability, guitar and drums, and just everything that they did. I thought was awesome. So I've just always loved them.
Yeah, that's outstanding. So if you weren't an athletic director, where do you think your life would be?
Well, other things that I really like, we were talking earlier about all these construction projects. I really like that part of my job, taking an old
building
space.
Or the actual.
Yeah, I mean, taking an old space. Look at our basketball practice facility is maybe the best example here. Is it was two. The surface of the hardwood was enough for two courts, but there was this balcony track that ran around the upper level that prevented it from being long enough to have two full-length basketball courts. But taking that, and then there were 6 racquetball courts, and going, okay, we put a floor in here because of the high ceiling. We can put offices upstairs and locker rooms downstairs. Like, my wife hates that when we go looking for a house when we have moved, that I'm like,
you're conceptualizing,
all right, we're gonna move the kitchen over there.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Why can't we just get a new house that doesn't need all that? I just enjoy that.
Conceptual.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, maybe construction or something like that would have been fun.
So the next question is, what do you think of this?
This room is, when we did the basketball practice facility, this podcast studio was this office that we just kind of discovered weirdly. And we have been thinking for 4 years, what would the best thing be for us to do with this space? And I think we finally found it. And this is another really good example of being able to use this to our best advantage, and something that is good for our program. It's convenient for our coaches. It's convenient for our athletes. So all year long, when you watch this show, it's just making it, more efficient and better for our staff.
Yeah. And finally, one suggestion, maybe a food spread in here would be good during the podcast.
Yeah, could we get some snacks? What about snacks? Do I look like a guy that wouldn't eat a snack?
Exactly. Right. What are we talking about here? Mark, thanks for hanging out with us, and I'm sure we'll do it again.
Absolutely.
As we go through this deal. So thanks for watching the Inferno Podcast number 47. Leave feedback and comments however you would like. We'll see what lies ahead for episode 48 when it comes out, but we appreciate you watching here with the Inferno Podcast. So long, everybody.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.